Now, before I start my message this morning, I want to follow up on what I gave you last week, because as you remember last week, I sent you home with a little assignment, a little homework thing to do, to notice maybe during the week different times where you hear the word hope, or you feel that hopefulness in you, those little bite-sized, we talked last week about bite-sized hope, and how those happen sometimes throughout the week. And I was just wondering if any of you out there felt or heard or experienced this kind of bite-sized hopes during this week. Anyone out there experience that this week? Okay. Unfortunately, I really did not. I've been telling you that before last week, I've been every so often hearing on the radio little bits of hope or a song about hope, or even watching TV, I see a little hopeful attitude in there. But last week, for some reason, I did not. And as I thought back, I thought, well, maybe it was because of all the snow this last week, because we got a lot of snow, and I had a lot of things to worry about that I normally don't worry about during the week, because I had to worry about shoveling, had to worry about getting it iced out there so no one slips and fall. I had to worry about the kids. They didn't have school a couple days this last week because of the snow. And so there's a lot of other concerns. And so I think I was overwhelmed by and preoccupied to notice my bits of hope this last week. But I hope that you will continue to think about that and continue to look for those bits of hope throughout your week. But this morning, we're going to look at another aspect of hope and how it helps us. As I start things off this morning, I'm going to play a little song from a little musical, Bye Bye Birdie, that came up while I was studying this last week, and I think it applies, as you'll see, to our message this morning.
Come on.
Why look so awfully tragic? Put on a happy face. Smiling can work like magic. Put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy. It's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile. Pick out a pleasant outlook. Stick out that noble chin. Wipe off the full of doubt look. Slap on a happy grin. And spread sunshine all over the place. Just put on a happy face. Flowers? Put on a happy face. Put on a happy face. Why do you mope around so sourly? It's such a strain. I always try to chuckle hourly. It clears the brain.
I knew a girl so gloomy, she'd never laugh or sing. She wouldn't listen to me. Now she's a mean old thing.
So spread sunshine all over the place. Put on a happy
God's going to cheer up, clear up, put on a happy face. It's a wonderful musical by Bye Bye Birdie. And those grace guys clearing up by putting on a happy face is kind of those, the kind of hope that we've been looking at over the last several weeks. But it's this feeling kind of hope in this case. The positive thinking or a bright attitude will make things better. But there's something about this song that I do like. And it's the basis for the sermon this morning, is that the grace guys are going to clear up. Because of what Jesus has done, the grace guys that we often find ourselves in will eventually clear up. The things of this world will not last. The things of this world will have an end to them. The things of this world are only temporary. And one glad morning, when this life is o'er, we'll fly away. Remember singing that hymn? And we'll have that hope in something that can last forever. And even now, with hope, we can see past the gray skies until those times when they will clear up. We can see those blue skies even as I talked this morning with the children. So this morning, we're going to look at two things that we can learn by looking at hope. And the first thing is that, like I said, life is temporary. One of the teachings throughout the Bible is that life here on earth is not the end of things. That this life is temporary. That there's a future beyond. Matthew 6, where Jesus is talking in the preaching of the Sermon on the Mount, says this clearest. In verses 19 and 20, it says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and rusts destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up yourselves treasure in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, your heart will be there also." That's where our hope is, right? That's where our heart should be, where our treasure is. Because the things here on earth, the things that moth and rust and time destroy or get taken away, are just material possessions. They're not going to last. Peter states this in his second letter as well. He says that the heavens will disappear with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed by fire. The earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought we be? You ought to be holy, live holy lives and godly lives. That's what it says here. He goes on in the few verses later saying, "But in keeping with this promise, we are looking forward with a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness." And so we see that this hope that we have in life is just temporary. The things we see on earth, the problems that we struggle with here on earth, are just temporary. And they won't last. Those gray skies will clear up. This is what we saw even in the book of Hebrews, in the great faith chapter. The hope that these men and women have in that city whose foundation and whose architect and builder was God, that they're looking for this forward to the city, this place where they can be with God. That their hope was in God and not in this life. That's where they put their hope in. And we'll be talking about heaven and all that takes place in the things of heaven here in the next month here as we talk about more and more about this hope. But this morning I'm just focusing on the temporary aspect of our lives. That there is a heaven that we can look forward to, but even past that we can look to the blue skies, past the gray skies that we have. Because this is something I think is important to remember, especially as we looked at snow this last week. Like I told you already, it shut things down for a couple days, didn't it? And when it's snowy and bleak outside, sometimes we get down and discouraged. In fact, I looked up that way up north, there sometimes where the skies are cloudy and even up north where the sunshine is shining quite as long, there's a term that they call this. It's called cabin fever, right? And it's not really, Googled and said, "Is cabin fever real?" And the first article that popped up says, "Although cabin fever is not recognized as a psychological illness, it is emotional and physical and has behavioral effects that are real and that can significantly affect a person's life." And so this idea that we're cooped up and we're down or discouraged or we got things in our lives that seem to be overwhelming us, it hurts. It causes us depression. Feelings of sleepiness or difficulty concentrating and hopelessness are all attributed to this disorder. And of course, it doesn't help that this last week, a lazy, stuck-up, inconsiderate, irrational, know-it-all groundhog decided that it's going to be 6 more weeks, right, of this winter. I mean, that's just irks me to no end that this guy just said, okay, hope even further on down the road there. Rest assured, though, spring will come. I mean, no matter how many inches are piled outside our doors, spring will always come. It might take longer than we want. It might not look and be as warm as we want, as quickly as we want, but spring is come. As sure as winter is now, spring will come. Now, as I look out of this congregation, I see many people, well, let's just say that they have vast experience and have a few miles on their tires, we'll say. But in your combined time here on earth, have you ever experienced a winter without a spring afterwards, right? Have any of you experienced that? No. It's just as sure about those things as God has promised us. As sure as spring follows winter, day follows night, this promise that God has given to us, these promises, we can put our hope into. I mean, God even says this about his promises in Jeremiah 33. Specifically, here he's talking about David's promises to David about being a king, having a king on his throne forever. But he says there in Jeremiah 33:20, if you can break my covenant with the day and my covenant with the night, so that day and night no longer come at their appointed time, then my covenant with David, my servant, and my covenant with the Levites, who are priests ministering before me, can be broken, and David will no longer have a descendant to reign on his throne. He's telling Jeremiah, hey, Jeremiah, just as you cannot change the order of the day and night, it's just the same as you cannot order the months and the weeks of the year and break them, I cannot break my promises either. David will always have someone to reign on his throne. God's promises are true. They're the only thing that are eternal when everything around us is temporary. So eventually those gray skies will clear up, if not in this lifetime, in the next. So why are we without hope when the skies are gray? Why are we so sad without that happy face when the skies are gray? I like what Wayne Able says in his book, New Hope Times. He says, the bleary days of winter have an awful way of sapping your energy in a way that even the most severe summers can't. For the first time in perhaps my adult life, he says, I complained about the season that I love. And then the more I thought about winter, the more I anticipated spring. The idea of new life, of gray clouds and slush giving way to blue skies and green shoots, give me a requisite dose of energy to keep my eyes open and my feet walking. I mean, just the idea of knowing that better days are ahead of us will help us to keep our eyes open and our feet walking. And if we remember that God's promises are given to us, we can make it through those gray skies. Because if you read your Bible, especially in the last several chapters of those who trust in God, it's going to live forever with him in heaven in a new earth. I'm sorry to spoil it for those of you who haven't read the last chapters of the book, if you haven't made it through all the way yet. But it does say that in the last book here, in the last chapters, that these gray skies are only temporary. They will not last. Revelation 21, it says, he will wipe away every tear from their eye. There will be no mourning or death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. It's all temporary. These gray skies, whether we experience the new skies now or in the life to come, are going to clear up. And we'll see the glory of God and his promises proving themselves once and again are real. God's promises are eternal and will bring about those blue skies and the joys of heaven that are shown to us and promised to us in the Bible. So life is temporary. But there's a second thing we can learn about hope this morning, is that life is teaching as well. Because, you know, if you are in these gray skies, you think, oh, I just have to hope for that they'll end. But no, we can hope in the midst of those gray skies too. Wayne Able gives a great example of this in his book by noting one man, Bear Grylls. Anyone know Bear Grylls? Have you ever seen those shows, adventure shows? He's a British adventurist who has a TV personality and a show, Man vs. Wild. It ran for 5 seasons. He has other wilderness shows as well, but his adventures usually start out the same way. Usually he is dropped in the middle of nowhere, and he has to find different ways of surviving and working things out and to make his way back to civilization, hopefully unscathed. That sounds impossible sometimes to us, but for this guy, he knows all about the different things in nature and how to work through things and survive when you have little or nothing. His aim, we're told, is to help us with tricks and tips and tools should we ever find ourselves in such similar circumstances. I don't know why we'd end up in the middle of the jungle or in the Arctic or wherever. But anyways, his adventures find him land in a land which is remote, scant, and threatening wherever you turn. Or he's being attacked by oppressive heat and with savage intensity. And there are several shows where he does different tricks and tips to kind of survive this elements by sometimes drinking his own bodily fluids, sleeping inside animal carcasses to keep warm, eating little creatures and little bugs that only look good if they're on children's programs and photoshopped, eating these disgusting things. We find it disgusting and revolting sometimes, just by looking at it sometimes, or by thinking about it, that he'd eat these bugs or these roots or plants that he cooks up as a stew. He uses tree sap to ward away insects by spreading it on his body. Sometimes he puts swamp mud on his body to kind of disguise his scent, so that way predatory animals won't come and attack him. And other little tips about what plants or roots are good to eat, and that's all sprinkled along the way. But Wayne Abel describes this guy in his book about hope this way. I mean, this is what he says about Bear Grylls. What Grylls really teaches us is that too much to bear is never too much. That we're ultimately never without resources to make that journey. There's resources all around us. We can find little things here during our journey. True, there are times when our situations call us to step outside of our norms or stretch our reality so that we can push it through and make it. I mean, sometimes there are going to be times where we have to step outside of our circumstances to kind of do things we don't normally do during those great times, but we'll get through them. That there's never too much that God puts upon us. And that's what the Bible even says here. That God never promises us more than we can bear. That's what the promise in 1 Corinthians 10:13 promises us. Especially about temptations, that no temptation is going to seize you that you cannot bear under. No, nothing that's going to happen in our gray skies are going to cause us to fall or fail if we trust in God. When going through this life, God will never give us more than we can bear, and we're never without resources. God will provide a way through. I mean, we talked about that when we talked about Exodus, how God's going to provide that way through the wilderness, through those difficult times. There are maybe it may be difficulties that will stretch us and tax our abilities, but we can and will get through them. And we can learn through them too. Again, I would include getting through them when that our time is over in the end as well. But Abel adds this one more thing to his summary. It says, there are two key facets in each of Grylls' challenges, which I imagine are the same in each situation you and I face. Firstly, they are temporary. That was my first point. But secondly, that they can be used for your advantage. Recognize that they are designed to prove that you got the capacity inside you to face and overcome every one of life's challenges. They're temporary. They're not going to last forever, but we can learn through them. They can be used for our advantage. We can recognize them to prove ourselves worthy, to prove that we have the capacity with God's help to make it through those life's challenges. Life is teaching. In those times of in our lives where suffering and pain try us, it teaches us. That's what James 1 verse 2 says. I know we don't like to read this verse many times, but this is what James tells us. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Because we know that the testing of our faith develops perseverance, and the perseverance must finish its work so that we may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. So this verse doesn't seem all that hopeful on its surface here, but it is, because we know that God will not only bring us through the trials, these temporary things, but we can learn from them too. They develop the things in our lives and the characteristics that God wants to bring out in our lives. And just knowing the fact that God is using these bad things in our lives to teach us, these circumstances that seem too hard to bear, to show us himself and allow us to depend upon him, gives us great hope. This is what Paul is talking about when he mentions his thorn in the side in 2 Corinthians 12. How he says, My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness, Paul. Therefore, Paul says, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may be rest on me. You see, Paul saw the benefit of suffering, saw the benefit of difficult times, saw the benefit of grace guys. That he can be learned from that. He can learn, first of all, to trust in God, and that God's grace will be sufficient for him. But he also talks about how confident he is in God working these things out for his good. Romans 8:28, a very famous verse. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. This is very hopeful. Paul knows that at the very least, these trials and tribulations in our life will teach us, will help us draw closer to God. It can be something we can learn from. They're not wasted. They're not without purpose. We might not know the purpose of the gray skies. We might not know why we're suffering or why we're going through certain circumstances. But Paul says, I'm confident, knowing who God is, that even those bad things in our lives will be used for our good, will be used to teach us, to help us, to show us who God is. And this is something we even see as we come to communion with Jesus' death on the cross. In our Sunday school lesson this morning, we were talking about Jesus' trial and crucifixion and how at that moment Jesus could have stopped it at any time. He could have called 10,000 angels, it says in Matthew, and could have caused it. Caused him to be removed from that situation. Could have caused him to be released from that cross. But he knew that he had to go through that time of trials and suffering. He knew he needed to go and die for the sins of the world. Because without his death, we would be hopeless. And he came to give us that hope. And so he died for you and me. Jesus knew all the pain and suffering was for a purpose. He knew the gray skies and knew about what lay behind. Because as I said, Hebrews 12, the chapter that comes after the great faith chapter in Hebrews, says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He knew that the gray skies would clear up and his sacrifice for sins and shame would pave the way for our gray skies to clear up. And this is one reason why we're celebrating communion this morning. Because we know that because of what Jesus has done for us, we have the hope. We have the promise of eternity. One reason we're celebrating is because of the hope that Jesus died on the cross. He gave his body and shed his blood to bring us hope, to teach us he's bigger and more powerful than even death itself. Death itself could not hold him down. He was able to come and die for us while we were yet sinners. This is the hope that we cling to. This is the promise fulfilled, and it gives us the hope of the promises yet to be fulfilled. I loved how hopeful the cross is in that way. Sometimes we look at the cross and think of all the pain and suffering, which I won't set aside. Jesus went through a lot, but he did this to bring us hope. Hope that we now have sins forgiven. We now have sins that are cleansed as white as snow. He died for us. He shed his blood. He gave his body so that we could have life, so we could have hope. He endured that shame and scorn so that we wouldn't have to. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. For that hope, that promise that he knew that he would give to us. So this morning, as we share around this holy table, let's remember this life and the things of this world that are just temporary. Life is temporary. It will soon be over. All of our trials and tribulations, all of our things here on earth is going to be taken away one of these days. We'll be burned up. But we can learn and discover God in our trials, in our tribulations. That life is a teaching time. It can teach us more about who we are and the God that we serve. I like how Wayne Abel concludes his little devotional section here about the gray skies. He says, "The grays of yesterday passes swiftly when the radiance of tomorrow shines on my horizon. And once more, I anticipate." Now, the grays of yesterday, the skies that were dreary, will one day shine in radiance. And we can hope. We can put our hope in Him. So as we saw this morning through that little funny thing from Bye Bye Birdie, gray skies will clear up. We can put on a happy face even now. Even in the midst of our gray skies, even in the midst of our trials and circumstances, they will clear up to put on a happy face.